Session number 12933, Frederick Weston, Reel 1.
Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in King Swinford, a little place, I believe, called Crotthersley.
Which county is it in?
I don't know. I've never been. I've only been back one. It's Staffordshire, I think.
What did your father do for a living?
He was helping his brother, who owned a farm down that way, and we were living in a small cottage by the canal.
I think you were telling me you went to school in many different places.
My father travelled around a lot. He was concerned with training young men to go out to Canada, to work in Canada, because of the Depression. And he had been out in Canada before the 1418 War, and he joined the Canadian forces and came back to England. He was a prisoner of war for 3 years, and he was in one of the first gas attacks by the Germans, chlorine. And he then settled, he came back to England, and one of the jobs I know he had when I was very small, he's working for the Ministry of Ag and Fish on the on training youngsters about farming methods, which he had used and been taught on the prairies.
You were telling me you left school at 14.
I went to many schools because my father travelled around a lot, and I was often farmed off to members of the family. And because my father couldn't, I lost my mother when I was 10, and my father couldn't have his family with him. We were taken by my godmother, Mrs. A.E.S. Weston, and she was a school teacher at the grammar school, or the county school for boys, I think it was, at Gravesend, St. James's. And she took us, all three of us, under her wing. She taught at school. She also kept us. I went to the same school for a short while, and but when it came, when I was 14, it was my own decision to, I could see the difficulties that obviously she was under. She was a very religious person, and I got away from home as soon as I could to relieve her of the responsibilities for me. I went to the C school at Stepney.
This would have been 36, I think.
Yes.
1936.
Yeah. And this came about because she knew some of the pilots at Gravesend, and they contributed to the sea school, the Prince of Wales Sea School at Stepney, which was opposite the merchant service. I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of the other place, but it was in Stepney, and I believe it's still there. Sailor Society.
So did you go into the Merchant Navy eventually?
Yes, I was on the, we did 6 months training there, and we went, I went as a deck boy on the Edinburgh Castle. We went, two of my ships were on the Union Castle line to South Africa. I went on the Edinburgh Castle, which was a very older ship of the line at that time, and I did a couple of trips on her as a deck boy, doing different jobs each trip, and I was on her last trip. They used to be able to say that they could tell the time when she came in to Cape Town, because she was the mail ship, and she'd been on that route for very many years. Later, because she paid off, that ended my employment on that ship, and I had to look for other employment, so I had to go back to Gravesend and to my aunt and stay with her. It was my regret that I never ended up with any money to be able to give her. All I could do was to keep myself when I was away. I used to go across to Tilbury and from Gravesend to Tilbury to the big employment kind of exchange that was over there, where they took on the crews for ships that went all over the world and all kinds of ships. And I queued up. I was about 15 at the time, queued up with lines and lines because unemployment was very bad then. Think about it now, but then it was nothing to what it was then, all the allowances that people used to have. And because I was obviously trained and obviously at that time, looking back on it, I must have been, well, I was on the lowest pay rates going. I found a job. I was taken on the tankers. British Fortitude was the tanker, and that route was out to Aberdeen. And we used to, on the trip out, we used to clean all the. I was an ordinary seaman then, so I must have got a bit of promotion. I don't think they had any deck boys. A pretty motley crew we had, looking back on it, but there were some very good chaps amongst them. And on the way out, we used to clean the tanks. Because all the rust and that in the bottom of the tanks, we used to go down into the tank holes with wooden spades and wooden buckets. And as you can imagine, with a big wooden spade, it doesn't help in getting a lot of picking up a lot of rust and things at the bottom of tanks. And this we used to do. Until we got to the Med, and until we got to the Suez, we used to go down the Suez. And going down the Suez, we used to have to paint all the pipes. As you know, on tankers, they have a lot of pipes going along from forward to aft, and a flying gangway that goes over the top of them, because you can't walk on the decks in heavy seas. You're far too low a draft for that. And we used to paint the all these huge pipes on deck, but of course we didn't use paint brushes or anything like that. You had a bucket of tar, and you had what was called cotton waste, which was just a bunch of old of rags really, and you dipped your hand into the tar, and you worked as a gang along the pipes. And of course, you didn't do it at night time when it was cool. You did it in the middle of the day. You worked a normal sort of shift, daytime shift at that time. And I remember the captain came out onto the flying gangway with a bottle of rum when we were going down there, and he offered the lads a tot of rum. And he looked at me. He said, "You're not old enough, are you?" So I didn't get a tot of rum. Then we went down the round to Aberdeen, where we to that's up the Persian Gulf, the Red Sea, and where we loaded our oil. And I remember it was Easter Sunday, on Easter Sunday when we arrived there, and the only place we could go on the jetty was to a little shop where you could buy drinks, and they used to have these small bottles with glass stoppers in the top, I remember. Anyway, the captain asked me if I wanted some overtime, And of course, we're always due with the money. Never had enough. So I found myself on the jetty with a man help, which is really a long pole, about 20 foot long, 15, 20 foot long, with a big round brush on the end. And you were standing on the jetty, moved along the jetty, painting the ship's side. That was my overtime. I think I did it all. I think I was the only one that I can remember doing it. The rations on board may be of interest. We used to get a ration of one tin of condensed milk to last a week. We used to get a ration of sugar. The only thing that was provided every day was coffee. It was a fanny of coffee for the crew. That was our ration of drink. Now, for the first 3 days, you had enough to have milk and sugar with your drink, and then the sugar ran out, and then for the last couple of days, or day at least, you were on to the raw coffee.
You were telling me at this time that you anticipated that war would be breaking out.
It was very obvious on rumours, especially on the Union Castle boats, that German submarines were known to be tracking merchant vessels and were doing practice runs. This was the rumours on attacking merchant ships at that time. And so when we came back to Falmouth, I paid off. I did start smoking on the tanker because I never smoked before in my life, but I started smoking then to get rid of the oil, which used to stay with you all the time, a sickly smell. When I paid off, and I've still got my paying off chits, it was just over £3. That was after a trip at Aberdeen. And when I got home to Gravesend, to my aunt, I was broke again. It cost me £3 to get from Falmouth through London to Gravesend. So each time I got home, I was still broke. But at least I was keeping myself.
How did you come to join the Marines?
My aunt bought me some magazines, Shipping Wonders of the World. And I used to look through these, and I saw a picture of a Royal Marine squad embarking, lined up on a quayside, embarking on a man of war. And that impression stayed with me, and I went to join the Navy because I knew about signalling from my merchant service experience training. And I went for an eyesight test, and they said they failed me because I was colourblind. When I got home after that humiliating experience, I told my aunt, and she said, "You're not colour blind, you're colour ignorant." I don't know. Anyway, I went back because next to the naval recruiting office in Chatham was the Royal Marine office. And their eyesight testing was a lot simpler. It was pieces of wool. Instead of having lights flashing into mirrors and things like this, it was picking out pieces of wool from some boxes, which I must have done very successfully. I then went along to the Royal Marines barracks at Chatham, and there was a squad on parade, and I just watched them for a while outside the gates, with the bayonets flashing in the sun and absolutely precise drill. And I went to the gates, I saw, and cut a long story short, I saw the RSM at the time. Name was Facey, I think. And he said, "Are you sure you want to sign on for 12 years? And of course, that's the only option I had at that time, knowing there's a war coming along and knowing that I wanted to be ready for it. I said yes, and I signed the dotted line. He then sent me to have a meal, and I could not believe it. I walked into a mess hall. I was the only one there. They had been and gone. There was mess in there. And I was shown a great pile of corned beef. I'd never seen so much food in all my life. These were leftovers. That's how I joined the Royal Marines.
What did you think of the training you received in the for the Marines?
Well, of course, we did peacetime training. I chose to go to Plymouth. I was given the choice. I went to Plymouth. We had distant relations down there, Mutley Plain. I didn't want to be too near home, or what was considered home. So I decided to go to Plymouth. I did my training down at Plymouth, 359 squad. And we started, I signed on when I was 16, and I joined in June 1939.
I think that your first ship was HMS Illustrious.
That is correct. Just before we were passing out, because I was right, being tall, I was the right-hand man in the front rank, and the only person I had on my right was the marker. Marine Chisholm at that time. He was later RSM physical training. What happened, unfortunately, with me, I contracted measles just before we were due to pass out on parade. So I ended up in hospital, a naval hospital. When I came out, of course, all my squad had gone to HMS Renown as a whole squad, and I was left on my own. It was then that I was detailed off for HMS Illustrious, and I departed with other trained soldiers. I was the only recruit, as it were, or real rookie. We marched with a band down to the Nickel Station, full marching order, and we went up to join her at Birkenhead. That was on the 16th of April.
1940?
Yes.
Where did the Illustrious sail to?
We went to working up trials near the Isle of Arran, where they do all the speed trials and engine trials and things like that. And of course, the aircraft trials as well, the Swordfish then we had. And when we finished the trials, we went to Bermuda for working up trials. And we had Swordfish, Gladiators, Skuas. And the Royal Marines manned half the ship's armament, four fives main armament. Aft, X and Y turret on the starboard side. I was in X turret, and the Y turrets on the port side.
What were you supposed to do at that action station?
The turrets were enclosed alongside each other. They had two 4.5 guns each. My job at action stations was a loader, and all the loading was done by hydraulics, and my job was to actually load the gun once we got the between us the on the loading tray. There was two of us that handled the round onto the loading tray. My job was to, with the hydraulics, to ram the shell home.
How soon was it that HMS Illustrious got into action? When did it get into action, HMS Illustrious?
Well, we did several actions. We did the Taranto actions, and in the trying to supply Malta, to keep the convoys going. We were often in action where we were based at Alexandria. And then...
Can you tell me about what you remember about the Taranto action?
Yes, I was quarterdeck sentry on that night, And so it was my job. I was on the quarter deck by the ship's bell. On quarter deck sensor, you were responsible for releasing the man overboard life buoys, which were around, and they had lights on them, for releasing those. And of course, I heard the aircraft coming in from the Taranto raid, and we were kept, the Tannoy kept us in the knowledge of what was going on.
Did any of the planes which were coming back seem shot up or in difficulties?
They were, but of course I wasn't witness to this, being in a very enclosed quarterdeck, because the flight deck completely covered the quarterdeck. And our jobs, our activities at that time. But of course we had to be ready to go to action stations, and when we weren't doing those jobs, we were at cruising stations or defence stations generally, so that action stations could quickly be taken if we were attacked.
Was there any atmosphere of elation on the ship after the success of Taranto?
It was very, I think, more amongst the pilots and the people who were very involved, obviously, in the raid, because we didn't really know how successful it had been. I mean, they were just reports. Everybody obviously was very pleased about was the very few casualties. They had expected more because they were very old planes from the previous war, really, but they were very successful.
What did you think of the Italian air attacks on the Illustrious?
Italian one. Well, they were always considered rather a joke. They used to bomb us and bomb the fleet from very great heights. And of course, the Italian Navy was bottled up, and that's how they got caught at Taranto. They kept out of the way, and their aircraft were very high flyers. So, although they used to drop bombs in the general direction, I don't think anybody really considered them as being, on the whole, as being very dangerous.
Was Illustrious a happy ship?
Under Captain Boyd, it was probably the happiest period of my life until then. In fact, it was.